realized that she had traded one language for another. The child was reclaimed, brought back to us. He tilted his head. And then, he said, we rose and became soldiers, so we would never be overcome again. As he whispered, as the smoke of his illusions disappeared, drums from the city's center pounded louder and louder, and drums all throughout the poor sector joined in. They thudded and rumbled, and I looked to the storyteller, mouth drifting open. "It is the storm," he said, "which is all the better, because my story is done."
"Thank you," I said. "I'm sorry to
go, little Novik," the storyteller said with a crooked smile. "Don't miss it." I grabbed Akos's arm and pulled him to his feet. He was scowling at the storyteller. He had not touched the cup of sweet purple tea that I had poured for him. I tugged hard to get him to follow me up the steps of the storyteller's house and into the alley. Even from here, I could see the ship drifting toward Voa from far off. I knew its shape the way I had known my mother's silhouette, even from a distance. How it bowed out at the belly and tapered at the nose. I knew which scavengers had yielded its uneven plates by how worn they were, or by their tints, orange and blue and black. Our patchwork craft, large enough to cast all of Voa in shadow. All around us, all throughout the city, I heard cheers. Out of habit, I raised my free hand up to the sky. A loud, sharp sound like the crack of a whip came from somewhere near the loading bay door of the ship, and veins of dark blue color spread from it in every direction, wrapping around the clouds themselves or forming new ones. It was like ink dropped into water, separate at first and then mixing, blending together until the city was covered in a blanket of dark blue mist. The ship's gift to us. Then, as it had every season of my life, it started to rain blue. Keeping one hand firmly in Akos's, I turned my other palm to catch some of the blue. It was dark, and wherever it rolled across my skin, it left a faint stain. The people at the end of the alley were laughing and smiling and singing and swaying. Akos's chin was tipped back. He gazed at the ship's belly, and then at his hand, at the blue rolling over his knuckles. His eyes met mine. I was laughing. "Blue is our favorite color," I said. "The color of the current stream when we scavenge." "When I was a child," he replied wonderingly, "it was my favorite color too, though all of Thuva hates it." I took the palmful of blue water I had collected and smeared it into his cheek, staining it darker. Akos spluttered, spitting some of it on the ground. I raised my eyebrows, waiting for his reaction. He stuck out his hand, catching a stream of water rolling off a building's roof, and lunged at me. I sprinted down the alley, not fast enough to avoid the cold water rolling down my back, with a childlike shriek. I caught his arm by the elbow, and we ran together, through the singing crowd, past swaying elders, men and women dancing too close, irritable off-planet visitors trying to cover up their wares in the market. We splashed through bright blue puddles, soaking our clothes. And we were both, for once, laughing. Chapter 12. Syra. That night, I scrubbed the blue stain from my skin and hair, then joined Akos at the apothecary counter to make the painkiller so I could sleep. I didn't ask him what he thought of the storyteller's account of Shotet history, which blamed Thuva, not Shotet, for the hostility between our people. He didn't offer his reaction. When the painkiller was done, I carried it back to my room and sat on the edge of my bed to drink it. And that was the last thing I remembered. When I woke, I was slumped sideways on the bed, on top of the blankets. Beside me, the half-empty mug of painkiller had turned on its side, and the sheets were stained purple where it had spilled. Sunrise was just beginning, judging by the pale light coming through the curtains. My body aching, I pushed myself up. Akos? The tea had knocked me unconscious. I pressed the heel of my hand to my forehead. But I had helped him make it. Had I made it too strong? I stumbled down the hallway and knocked on his door. No, I couldn't have made it too strong. I had only prepared the Sendes stocks for it. He had done the rest. He had drugged me. There was no answer at his door. I pushed it open. Akos's room was empty, drawers open, clothes missing, dagger gone. I had been suspicious of his kindness as he coaxed me into leaving the house, and I had been right to be. I yanked my hair back and tied it away from my face. I went back to my room, shoving my feet into my boots. I didn't bother with the laces. He had drugged me. I wheeled around and searched the far wall for the panel we had pushed through yesterday to slip out of the house. There was a small gap between it and the rest of the wall. I gritted my teeth against pain. He had wanted me to leave the house with him so I would show him how to get out. And I had armed him with that Zoldan knife. I had trusted him with my potion. And now I would suffer for it.
I think you're lying to yourself about what I am, he had said.
Honor has no place in survival, I had taught him. I charged into the hallway. There was already a guard walking toward me. I braced myself against the door. What was he coming to say? I didn't know what to hope for, Akos's escape or his capture. The guard stopped just shy of my door and bent his head to me. He was one of the shorter, younger ones, baby-faced and carrying a blade. One of the ones who still stared wide-eyed at my arms when the dark lines spread over them. What? I demanded, gritting my teeth. The pain was back, almost as bad as it had been after I tortured Uzulz at Sivas. What is it?
The Sovereign Steward, Vas Kuzar, sends word that your servant was discovered trying to flee the grounds with his brother last night, the guard said. He is currently confined, awaiting the Sovereign's assigned punishment. Vas requests your presence at the private hearing in 2 hours in the weapons hall.
With his brother. That meant Akos had found a way to get Aijah out, too. I remembered Aijah's screams after he first arrived here, and shuddered. I went to the private hearing fully armed, dressed as a soldier. Rizek had left the curtains down in the weapons hall, so it was as dark as night, lit by the wavering light of the Fenzu above. He stood on the platform, hands behind his back, staring at the wall of weapons above him. No one else was in the room. Yet.
This was our mother's favorite, he said as the door closed behind me.
He touched the current stick, suspended on a diagonal from the wall. It was a long, narrow pole with blades at either end. Each of the blades contained a channeling rod, so if the weapon touched skin, dark shadows of current wrapped around the whole thing, from end to end. It was nearly as long as I was tall.
An elegant choice, he said, still without turning around. More for show than anything. Did you know our mother was not particularly proficient in combat?
Father told me. But she was clever, strategic. She found ways to avoid physical altercations, acknowledging her weakness.
He turned. He wore a smug smile.
You should be more like her, sister, he said. You are an excellent fighter. But up here, he tapped the side of his head. Well, it's not your strength.
The shadows traveled faster beneath my skin, spurred on by my anger. But I kept my mouth closed.
You gave Karaseth a weapon. You took him through the tunnels.
Rizek shook his head.
You slept through his escape?
He drugged me, I said tersely.
Oh, and how did he do that?
Rizek said lightly, still smirking.
pinned you down and poured the potion into your mouth.
I don't think so. I think you drank it, trustingly. Drank a powerful drug prepared by your enemy.
Rizek, I started. You almost cost us our oracle, Rizek snapped. And why? Because you're foolish enough to let your heart flutter for the first painkiller who comes around.
I didn't argue. He had spent a long time searching the galaxy for an oracle, with my father and without. In one night, that oracle had almost escaped. My doing. And maybe he was right. Maybe whatever small trust I had felt for Akkos, whatever appeal he had held, had come because he offered me relief. Because I was so grateful for the reprieve from pain and from isolation that my heart had softened. I had been stupid.
You can't blame him for wanting to rescue his brother or for wanting to get out of here, I said, my voice quaking with fear.
You really don't get it, do you? Rizek said, laughing a little. People will always want things that will destroy us, Syra. That doesn't mean we just let them act on what they want.
Rizek pointed to the side of the room.
Stand over there and don't say a word, he said. I brought you here to watch what happens when you don't keep your servants under control.
I was shivering, burning, and I looked like I was standing under a canopy of vines marked by their shadows. I stumbled to the side of the room, my arms clutched tightly around me. I heard Rizek's order to enter. The huge doors at the other end of the room opened. Voss walked in first, armored, his shoulders back. Behind him, flanked by soldiers, was the sagging, stumbling form of Akkos Karaseth. Half his face was covered in blood, coming from a gash in his eyebrow. His face was swollen, his lips split. Beaten already, but then he had gotten good at taking a beating. Behind him walked Aija, also bleeding and beaten, but more than that, vacant. His face was rough with a patchy beard, and he was gaunt, a shred of the young man I had seen from my hidden vantage point 2 seasons ago. I could hear Akkos breathing from where I stood, sputtering. But he straightened at the sight of my brother.
"My, my, aren't you a sight?" Rizek said, descending the steps slowly.
"How far did he get, Voss?
Past the fence?"
"Not even," Voss said. "Got him in the kitchens, coming out of the tunnels."
"Well, let me clarify your miscalculation, for future reference, Karaseth," Rizek said.
"Just because my late mother enjoyed the old-fashioned appearance of this house doesn't mean that I didn't outfit my home with the most advanced security measures possible after her passing, including motion sensors around secure rooms, such as your brother's."
"Why are you keeping him here?"
Akkos said through gritted teeth.
"Does he even have a current gift? Or have you starved it out of him?"
Voss, casually, lazily, backhanded Akkos. Akkos crumpled, clutching his cheek.
"Akkos," Aija said. His voice was like a light touch. "Don't."
"Why don't you tell him, Aija?" Rizek said.
"Have you developed a current gift?"
Akkos peered past his fingers at his brother. Aija closed his eyes for a moment, and when he opened them again, nodded.
"Rising Oracle,"
Akkos murmured in Shotet. At first I didn't know what he meant. It was not a phrase we used. But Thuvazit had different words for all 3 oracles, one falling, close to retiring, one sitting, prophesying from the temple, and one rising, coming into the fullness of his or her power.
"You would be correct in assuming that I have not been able to make him use his gift for my benefit," Rizek said. "So instead, I intend to take it."
"Take it?"
Akkos said, echoing my own thoughts. Rizek stepped closer to Akkos and crouched in front of him, his elbows balanced on his knees. "Do you know what my current gift is?" he said lightly.
Akos didn't answer.
"Tell him about it, Syra, dear," Rizek said, jerking his head toward me. "You are intimately acquainted with it."
Akos, bracing himself with one hand, lifted his eyes to mine. There were tears mixed with the blood on his face.
"My brother can trade memories," I said.
I sounded empty. Felt like it, too.
"He gives you one of his, and takes one of yours in return."
Akos went still.
"A person's gift proceeds from who they are," Rizek said. "And who they are is what their pasts have made them. Take a person's memories, and you take the things that formed them. You take their gift. And at last..."
Rizek ran his finger down the side of Akos's face, collecting blood. He rubbed it between his thumb and forefinger, examining it.
"At last, I will not have to rely on another to tell me the future."
Akos threw himself at Rizek, moving fast to give the soldiers the slip, his hands outstretched. He pressed his thumb hard into the side of Rizek's throat, pinning his right arm with the other, teeth bared. Animal. Vas was on top of him in seconds, yanking him by the back of his shirt and punching him hard in the ribs. When Akos was flat on his back, Vas pressed a shoe to his throat and raised his eyebrows.
"One of my soldiers did this to you once," Vas said. "Before I killed your father. It seemed to be effective then. Stay still or I will crush your trachea."
Akos twitched, but stopped thrashing. Rizek picked himself up, massaging his throat and brushing dust from his pants and checking the straps of his armor. Then he approached Aija. The soldiers who had walked in with Akos were now flanking Aija, each one with a firm grip on one of his arms. As if it was necessary. Aija looked so dazed I was surprised he was still awake. Rizek lifted both hands and touched them to Aija's head, his eyes focused and hungry. Hungry for escape. It was not much to watch, just Rizek and Aija, joined by Rizek's hands, stares locked for a long time. When I first watched Rizek do this, I was too much of a child to understand what was going on, but I did remember that it had taken only a moment for him to trade one memory. Memories happened in flashes, not as drawn out as reality, and it seemed strange that something so important, so essential to a person, could disappear so quickly. Breathless, all I could do now was watch. When Rizek released Aija, it was with a strange, bewildered look. He stepped back and looked around like he wasn't sure where he was. Felt his body like he wasn't sure who he was. I wondered if he had thought about what trading his memories away would cost him, or if he had just assumed that he was so potent a personality there was more than enough of him to go around. Aija, meanwhile, looked at the weapons hall like he had only just recognized it. Was I just imagining the familiarity in his eyes as they followed the steps up to the platform? Rizek nodded to Vas to take his foot from Akos's throat. Vas did. Akos lay still, staring at Rizek, who crouched beside him again.
"Do you still blush so easily?"
Rizek said softly.
"Or was that something you grew out of eventually?"
Akos's face contorted.
"You will never disrespect me with silly escape plans again," Rizek said. "And your punishment for this first and only attempt is that I will keep your brother around, taking piece after piece from him until he is no longer someone you wish to rescue."
Akos pressed his forehead to the ground and closed his eyes.
And no wonder.
Ija Karaseth was as good as gone.
Chapter 13. Syra. That night, I didn't take a painkiller. I couldn't rely on Akos to make it anymore, after all, and I didn't really trust myself to make it alone yet. When I returned to my room, I found the dagger I had given Akos on my pillow, left there as a warning by Rizek, I assumed. I locked Akos's room from the outside. It was hard to say whether he wasn't speaking to me or I wasn't speaking to him. In any case, we didn't exchange words. The Sojourn Festival carried on all around us, and I was called to stand at my brother's side, dark-streaked and silent, at some of the festivities. Akos was always at my back, his occasional touch compulsory, his gaze distant. Every time his skin grazed mine to bring relief, I twitched away at first, all trust gone. Most of the time I spent at the arena, presiding over challenges at Rizek's side. Arena challenges, one-on-one, public fights, were a long-standing Shotet tradition, originally intended as a sport to hone our combat skills in the days when we had been weak and abused by almost everyone in the galaxy. Now, during the week of the Sojourn Festival, it was legal to challenge almost anyone you had a grievance with to fight, either until one person surrendered or until death. However, a person couldn't challenge someone whose social status, arbitrarily decided by Rizek or someone he appointed, exceeded their own. As a result, people often chose to provoke their true enemies by targeting the people around them, friends and loved ones, until the other extended the challenge. As the festival advanced, the fights became bloodier and more deadly. So I dreamt of death, and death filled my days. The day after I turned 16, the day before we boarded the Sojourn ship, and 5 days after Rizek began trading memories with Ija, Akos Karaseth received the armor he had earned long ago, at the soldier camp. I had just finished running sprints in the gym, so I was pacing back and forth in my bedroom, catching my breath, sweat dripping down the back of my neck. Voss knocked on the doorframe, a polished armor vest dangling from one of his hands.
"Where's Karaseth?"
Voss said. I took him down the hallway and unlocked Akos's door. Akos was sitting on his bed, and judging by his unfocused gaze, he was drugged by hushflower, which he now consumed petal by petal, raw. He stashed them in his pockets. Voss tossed the armor at Akos, who caught it with both hands. He handled it like it might shatter, turning it over and running his fingers over each dark blue panel.
"It is as much as you earned, I'm told, under Vakrez's teaching last season," Voss said.
"How is my brother?" Akos said. Throaty.
"He no longer needs a lock to stay in his room," Voss said. "He stays of his own free will."
"That's not true. It can't be."
"Voss," I said, "go." I knew rising tension when I felt it, and I didn't really want to watch whatever happened when it broke. Voss tilted his head as he regarded me, then bowed slightly and left. Akos held the armor up to the light. It was built for him, with adjustable straps to accommodate his inevitable growth, flexibility through the ribcage, extra padding over his stomach, which he always forgot to protect when we trained. There was a sheath built into the right shoulder so he could draw over his head with his left hand. It was a high honor to wear this kind of armor, especially at such a young age. "I'm going to lock you in again now," I said.
"Is there any way to undo what Rizek does?"
Akos asked, like he hadn't heard me. He looked like he had lost the strength to stand. I thought of refusing to answer him. Short of asking Rizek nicely to trade the memories back and hoping he's in a giving mood, no.
Akko stood and dropped the armor over his head. When he tried to tighten the first strap over his ribcage, he winced, shaking out his hand. The straps were made of the same material as the rest of it, and they were hard to maneuver. I pinched the strap between my fingers, tugging him toward me. My own fingers were already calloused. I pulled at the strap, working it back and forth until it was pulled tight around his side.
"I didn't mean to involve you," Akko said quietly.
"Oh, don't patronize me," I said tersely. "Manipulating me was a crucial part of your plan, and it's exactly what I expected." I finished with the straps and stepped back.
Oh, I thought. He was tall. So tall. And strong and armored. The dark blue skin of the creature he had hunted still rich with color. He looked like a Shotet soldier. Like someone I could have wanted if we had found a way to trust each other.
Fine, Akko said, again in that quiet voice.
I meant to involve you, but I didn't expect to feel bad about it.
I felt choked. I didn't know why. I ignored it. And now you want me to help you feel less bad, is that it? I said. Before he could answer, I walked out, bringing the door closed behind me. Before Akos and me were the dusty streets of Voa, behind a tall metal fence. A large, shrill crowd waited for us beyond it. Rizek stepped out of the house with his long, pale arm raised to greet them, and they let out a dissonant cry. The Sojourn Festival was almost over. Today, all the able-bodied and of-age Shotet would board the Sojourn ship, and soon after that, we would leave this planet behind. Vas followed Rizek out the door, and then, dressed in a clean white shirt and looking more present than I had ever seen him, Aija. His shoulders were back, his steps wider, as if for a taller man, his mouth curled at one corner. Aija's eyes passed over his brother and scanned the street beyond Noavek Manor.
Aija,
Akko said, his voice breaking. Aija's face betrayed some recognition, as if he had spotted his brother from a great distance. I turned toward Akko. Later, I said harshly, grabbing the front of his armor. I couldn't have him breaking down with all these people watching us. Not here, not now. Okay? As I pulled away, released him, I watched his throat work to swallow. He had a freckle under his jaw, near his ear. I had never seen it before. His eyes still on Aija, Akko nodded. Rizek descended the steps, and we all followed him. The Sojourn ship shaded us, casting Voa in shadow. Decades of the Sojourn had produced the city that surrounded us, a patchwork of old stone structures reinforced with clay and new technology scavenged from other cultures and lands. Low buildings with glass spires built on top of them, reflecting images of other planets. Dusty, dirt-packed streets with sleek, reflective ships gliding above them. Street carts selling current channeling talismans, next to carts selling screen implants that could be wedged beneath a person's skin. That morning, between surges of pain, I had traced and shaded my dark eyes with blue powder and braided my thick hair. I wore the armor I had earned at the edge of the divide when I was younger, and the guard around my left forearm. I looked back at Akko. He was armored too, of course, with new black boots and a long-sleeved gray shirt that pulled too tight around his forearms. He looked afraid. He had told me that morning, as we walked to the entrance of the manor, that he had never been off-planet before. And then there was Aija, changed, walking right in front of us. There was plenty to fear. As we passed through the gate, I nodded to him, and he released my arm. It was time for my 11th procession, and I wanted to make it to the transport vessel on my own strength. The walk passed in a haze.
shouting, applauding, Rizek's fingers finding outstretched hands and squeezing. His laugh, my breaths, Akos's trembling hands. Dust in the air, and smoke from cooked food. I finally made it inside the transport vessel, where Aija and Vas were already waiting. Aija was adjusting his own straps with the ease of someone who had done it a dozen times before. I pulled Akos toward a seat in the back, wanting to keep him separate from his brother. A great roar sounded from the crowd as Rizek waved from the doorway. Just after the hatch closed, Aija fell into the straps holding him in his seat, his eyes wide but also blank, like he was staring at something none of the rest of us could see. Rizek, who had been fastening his own restraints, undid them and sat forward, his face inches from Aija's. "What is it?" Rizek said.
"A vision of trouble," Aija said. "An act of defiance. Public.
Preventable?" It was almost as if they had had this exact conversation before. Maybe they had.
"Yes, but in this case, you should let it come," Aija said, now focusing on Rizek. "You can use it to your advantage. I have a plan."
Rizek narrowed his eyes.
"Tell me."
"I would, but we have an audience."
Aija jerked his head toward the back of the vessel, where Akos sat across from me.
"Yes, your brother is an inconvenience, isn't he?"
Rizek clicked his tongue. Aija didn't disagree. He leaned back in his seat and closed his eyes as we launched. The loading dock of the Sojourn ship was one of my favorite places, vast and open, a maze of metal. Before us was a fleet of transport vessels ready to take us to a planet's surface, polished to perfection now, but soon to return streaked with dirt and smoke and rain and stardust, badges of where they had been. They were not round and squat like passenger floaters, or jagged and hulking like the Sojourn ship. Instead, they were smooth and sleek, like birds caught mid-dive, with their wings folded back. Each one was multicolored, formed from different metals, and big enough to hold at least 6 passengers, though some were larger. Mechanics in dark blue jumpsuits swarmed our vessel when it landed. Rizek got off first, jumping down before the steps had even descended from the hatch. Akos had come to his feet, his hands squeezed into fists so tight I could see tendons standing out from knuckle bone.
"Are you still in there?" Akos asked Aija, quiet.
Aija sighed and dragged one fingernail under another. I watched him carefully. Rizek was obsessed with clean fingernails and would sooner have broken one off than allow dirt beneath it. Was this gesture, Aija scraping fingernails clean, something that belonged to him too? Or was it Rizek's? A sign of Aija's transformation? How much of my brother now pulsed inside of Aija Karaseth? He answered,
"I don't know what you mean."
"Yes, you do."
Akos pressed a hand to his brother's chest and pushed him back against the metal wall of the vessel, not violently, but urgently, leaning in close.
"Do you remember me? Cece? Dad?"
"I remember..."
Aija blinked slowly, like he was just waking.
"I remember your secrets."
He scowled at Akos.
"The time you stole with our mother after the rest of us went to sleep. How you followed me around all the time because you couldn't manage on your own. Is that what you mean?"
Tears shone in Akos's eyes.
"That isn't all of it," Akos said. "That isn't all I am to you. You have to know that. You..."
"Enough."
Vas walked to the back of the ship.
"Your brother is coming with me, Karaseth."
Akos's hands twitched at his sides, itching to strangle. He was Vas's height now, so their eyes met on the same plane, but he had half the other man's bulk. Voss was a war machine, a man of muscle. I couldn't even imagine the two fighting. All I could see was Akos on the ground, limp. Akos lunged, and so did I. His hand was just reaching for Voss's throat when I got to them, one hand on each chest, pressing them apart. It was surprise, not strength, that made this effective. They both moved backward, and I wedged myself between them. "Come with me," I said to Akos. "Now." Voss laughed.
"Better listen to her, Karaseth. Those aren't little heart tattoos she hides under that arm guard."
Then he took Ija's arm, and together they left the ship. I waited until I could no longer hear their footsteps before backing off. "He's one of the best soldiers in Shotet," I said to Akos. "Don't be an idiot."
"You have no idea," Akos snapped. "Have you ever even cared about someone enough to hate the person who took them from you, Syra?"
An image of my mother came to mind, a vein in her forehead bulging, like it always did when she was angry. She was scolding Otega for taking me to dangerous parts of the city during our lessons, or for cutting my hair to my chin. I couldn't remember which. I had loved her even in those moments, because I knew she was paying attention, unlike my father, who didn't even look me in the eye. I said, "Lashing out at Voss because of what happened to Ija will only get you injured and me aggravated. So take some hush flower and get a hold of yourself before I shove you out the loading bay doors." For a moment, it looked like he might refuse, but then, shaking, he slid a hand into his pocket and took out one of the raw hush flower petals he kept there. He pressed it into his cheek. "Good," I said. "Time to go." I stuck out my elbow, and he put his hand around it. Together we walked through the empty hallways of the sojourn ship, which were polished metal, loud with echoes of distant feet and voices. My quarters on the warship looked nothing like my wing of Noavek Manor. The latter had dark, polished floors and clean white walls, impersonal, but the former was packed with objects from other worlds. Exotic plants suspended in resin and hanging from the ceiling like a chandelier. Mechanical, glowing insects buzzing in circles around them. Lengths of fabric that changed color depending on the time of day. A stain-spattered stove and a metal cold box, so I didn't have to go to the cafeteria. Along the far wall, past the little table where I ate my meals, were hundreds of old discs that held holograms of dancing, fighting, sports in other places. I loved to mimic the staggering, collapsing techniques of Agra dancers or the stiff, structured ritual dances of Tepes. It helped me focus through the pain. There were history lessons among the discs, too, and films from other planets, old news broadcasts, long, dry documentaries about science and language, recordings of concerts. I had watched them all. My bed was in the corner, under a porthole and a net of tiny burnstone lanterns, the blankets still rumpled from the last time I had slept in it. I didn't allow anyone into my quarters on the sojourn ship, not even to clean. Dangling from a hole in the ceiling, between the preserved plants, was a length of rope. It led to the room above, which I used for training, among other things. I cleared my throat. "You'll be staying through here," I said, crossing the crowded space. I waved my hand over the sensor next to a closed door. It slid open to reveal another room, also with a single porthole to the outside. It used to be an obscenely large closet. These were my mother's private quarters before she died. I was babbling. I didn't know how to talk to him anymore, now that he had drugged me and taken advantage of my kindness, now that he had lost the thing he had been fighting for, and I hadn't done anything to stop it. Which was my pattern. Stand by while Rizek wreaks havoc. Akos had paused next to the door to look at the armor that decorated the wall. It was nothing like Shotet armor, bulky or unnecessarily decorated, but some of it was beautiful, made of gleaming orange metal or draped with durable black fabric. He made his way into the next room, slowly. It looked a lot like the one he had left behind in Noavek Manor. All the supplies and equipment necessary to brew poisons and potions were along one wall, arranged the way he liked it. In the week before his betrayal, I had sent a picture of his setup ahead of us to be copied exactly. There was a bed with dark gray sheets. Most Chotet fabric was blue, so the sheets had been hard to find. The burnstones in the lanterns above the bed had been dusted with jealousy powder, so they burned yellow. There were books on Elmatahak and Chotet culture on the low bookcase next to the bed. I pressed a button next to the door, and a huge holographic map of our location sprawled over the ceiling. Right now it displayed Voa, since we were still hovering above it, but it would show our path through the galaxy as we traveled. "I know quarters are close here," I said, "but space on the ship is limited. I tried to make it livable for us both."
"You made this place?" he said, turning toward me.
I couldn't read his expression. I nodded. "Unfortunately, we'll have to share a bathroom."
Still babbling.
"But it's not for long."
"Syra," he interrupted.
"Nothing is blue.
Not even the clothes.
And the ice flowers are labeled in Thuvazit. Your people think blue is cursed, and you can't read Chotet," I said quietly. My current shadows started to move faster, sprawling under my skin and pooling beneath my cheeks. My head pounded so hard I had to blink away tears. "The books on Elmasahak are in Chotet, unfortunately, but there's a translation device next to them. Just place it over the page and..."
"But after what I did to you," he began.
"I sent the instructions before that," I replied. Akko sat down on the edge of the bed.
"Thank you," he said. "I'm sorry about everything. I just wanted to get him out. It was all I could think about."
His brow was a straight, low line above his eyes that made it too easy to see his sadness as anger. He had cut his chin shaving. There was a rumble in his whisper.
"He was the last thing I had left."
"I know," I replied. "But I didn't know. Not really. I had watched Rizek do things that made my stomach turn. But it was different for me than it was for Akos. I at least knew that I was capable of similar horrors. He had no way of understanding what Aija had become."
"How do you keep doing this?" he said. "Keep going, when everything is so horrible."
Horrible? Was that what life was? I had never put a word to it. Pain had a way of breaking time down. I thought about the next minute, the next hour. There wasn't enough space in my mind to put all those pieces together, to find words to summarize the whole of it. But the keep going part, I knew the words for. "Find another reason to go on," I said. "It doesn't have to be a good one, or a noble one. It just has to be a reason." I knew mine. There was a hunger inside me, and there always had been. That hunger was stronger than pain, stronger than horror. It gnawed even after everything else inside me had given up. It was not hope. It did not soar. It slithered, clawed, and dragged, and it would not let me stop. And when I finally named it, I found it was something very simple. The desire to live. That night was the last night of the Sojourn Festival. When the last few transport vessels landed in the loading bay, and we all feasted on the Sojourn ship together. The people we brought with us were supposed to be energetic by now, their confidence and determination bolstered by the celebratory events of the past week, and it seemed to me that they were. The crowd that carried Akos and me on their tide toward the loading bay was buoyant and loud. I was careful to keep my bare skin away from them. I didn't want to draw attention to myself by causing people pain. I walked to the platform where Rizek stood braced against the railing, Aija at his right. Where was Voss? I wore my Chotet armor, polished to perfection, over a long, sleeveless black dress. The fabric brushed the toes of my boots as I moved. Rizek's kill marks were on full display. He kept his arm flexed to show them at their best. Someday he would begin a second row, like my father. When I arrived, he flashed a smile at me, which made me shudder. I took my place on his left at the railing. I was supposed to display my current gift at times like these, to remind all the people around us that despite Rizek's charm, we were not to be trifled with. I tried to accept the pain, absorb it like I did the cold wind when I had forgotten to wear the right coat, but I found it difficult to focus. In front of me, the waiting crowd wavered and swam. I wasn't supposed to wince. I wouldn't. I let out a relieved exhale when the last two transport vessels drifted through the open loading bay hatch. Everyone applauded when the ship's doors opened, and the last group of Chotet spilled in. Rizek held up both of his hands to quiet the crowd. It was time for his welcoming speech. But just as Rizek opened his mouth, a young woman stepped forward from the group that had just left the transport vessel. She had a long blonde braid and wore not the bright colors of the more common Chotet and the crowd below, but subtle blue-gray finery to match her eyes. It was a popular color among Chotet's wealthy. She was Leti Zetsivus, Uzul's daughter. She held a current blade high in the air, and the dark tendrils wrapped around her hand like strings, binding the blade to her body. "The first child of the family Noavek," she shouted, "will fall to the family Benazit." It was my brother's fate, spoken plainly. "That is your fate, Rizek Noavek," Leti shouted, "to fail us and to fall." Voss, who had pushed through the crowd, now seized her wrist with the certainty of a well-trained warrior. He bent over her, pressing her hand back so she was forced to her knees. Her current blade clattered to the floor. "Leti Zetsivus," Rizek said, lilting. It was so quiet in the room that he didn't even need to raise his voice. He was smiling as she struggled against Voss's grip, her fingers turning white under the pressure. "That fate is a lie told by the people who want to destroy us," he began. Beside him, Aija bobbed his head a little, like Rizek's voice was a song he knew by heart. Maybe that was why Rizek didn't look surprised to see Leti on her knees below us, because Aija had seen it coming. Thanks to his oracle, Rizek already knew what to say, what to do. "They are people who fear us for our strength and seek to undermine us. The Assembly. Thuva," Rizek continued. "Who taught you to believe such lies, Leti? I wonder why it is that you espouse the same views as the people who came to your house to murder your father." So that was how Rizek was twisting things. Now, instead of Leti declaring my brother's fate, a crusader for the truth, she was spouting the same lies that our Thuvazit enemies supposedly told. She was a traitor, possibly even one who had allowed assassins to penetrate her family's home so they could kill her father. Ridiculous, really. But sometimes people just believed what they were told. It was easier to survive that way. "My father was not murdered," Leti said in a low voice. "He took his own life because you tortured him. You tortured him with that thing you call a sister, and the pain was driving him mad." Rizek smiled at her as if she was the mad one, spewing nonsense. He cast his gaze all around him at the people who waited with bated breath to hear his response.
"This," he said, gesturing to Letty. "This is the poison our enemies wish to use to destroy us. From within, not without. They tell lies to turn us against each other, to turn us against our own families and friends. That is why we must protect ourselves against not only their potential threats to our lives, but also their words. We are a people who has been weak before. We must not become so again."
I felt it, the shiver that went through the crowd at his words. We had just spent a week remembering how far our ancestors had come, battered across the galaxy, our children taken from us, our beliefs about scavenging and renewal universally derided. We had learned to fight back, season by season. Even though I knew that Rizek's true intentions were not to protect Shotet, but rather himself and the Noavek dynasty, I was still almost taken in by the emotion in his voice and the power he offered us like an outstretched hand.
"And there is no more effective blow than to strike against me, the leader of our great people."
He shook his head.
"This poison cannot be allowed to spread through our society. It must be drained, drop by drop, until it poses no more harm."
Letty's eyes were full of hate.
"Because you are the daughter of one of our most beloved families, and because you are clearly in pain after the loss of your father, I will give you a chance to fight for your life in the arena, instead of simply losing it. And since you assign some of this supposed blame to my sister, it is she who will face you there," Rizek said. "I hope you see this as the mercy it is."
I was too stunned to protest, and too aware of what the consequences would be. Rizek's wrath. Looking like a coward in front of all these people, losing my reputation as someone to fear, which was my only leverage. And then, of course, the truth about my mother, which always loomed over Rizek and me. I remembered the way people chanted my mother's name as we walked the streets of Voa during my first procession. Her people had loved her, the way she held strength and mercy in tension. If they knew that I was responsible for her passing, they would destroy me. Veins of dark stained my skin as I stared down at Letty. She gritted her teeth and stared back. I could tell she would take my life with pleasure. As Voss jerked Letty to her feet, people in the crowd shouted at her, "Traitor! Liar!" I felt nothing, not even fear, not even Akos's hand catching my arm to soothe me.
"You okay?" Akos asked me.
I shook my head. We stood in the anteroom just outside the arena. It was dim but for the glow of our city through the porthole, reflecting sunlight for a few hours yet. The room was adorned with portraits of the Noavek family over the door. My grandmother, Lazma Noavek, who had murdered all her brothers and sisters to ensure that her own bloodline was fate-favored. My father, Lazmet Noavek, who had tormented the goodness from my brother because of his weak fate. And Rizek Noavek, pale and young, the product of two vicious generations. My darker skin and sturdier build meant I took after my mother's family, a branch of the Roddix line, distant relation to the first man Akos had killed. All the portraits wore the same mild smiles, bound by their dark wooden frames and fine clothing. Rizek and every Shotet soldier who could fit in the hall waited outside. I could hear their chatter through the walls. Challenges weren't permitted during the sojourn, but there was an arena in the ship anyway, for practice matches and the occasional performance.
My brother had declared that the challenge would take place just after his welcome speech, but before the feast. Nothing like a good fight to the death to make Chotet's soldiers hungry, after all.
Was it true, what that woman said?
Akko said.
Did you do that to her father?
Yes, I said, because I thought it was better not to lie. But it wasn't better. It didn't feel better that way.
What is Rizek holding over you?
Akko said.
To make you do things you can barely stand to admit to.
The door opened, and I shuddered, thinking the time had come. But Rizek closed the door behind him, standing beneath his own portrait. It didn't look quite like him anymore, the face in it too round and spotted.
What do you want? I said to him.
Aside from the execution you commanded without even consulting me, that is.
What would I have gained by consulting you?
Rizek said.
I would have had to hear your irritating protestations first, and then, when I reminded you of how foolish you were to trust this one,
here he nodded toward Akos,
how that foolishness nearly lost me my oracle, when I offered this arena challenge to you as a way to make it up to me, you would agree to do it.
I closed my eyes, briefly.
I came to tell you that you are to leave your knife behind,
Rizek said.
No knife? Akos demanded. She could get stabbed before she ever has a chance to lay a hand on that woman. Do you want her to die?
No, I answered in my own head. He wanted me to kill. Just not with a knife.
She knows what I want, Rizek said. And she knows what will happen if I don't get it. Best of luck, little sister.
He swept out of the room. He was right. I knew. I always knew. He wanted everyone to see that the shadows that traveled under my skin were good for more than just pain. They also made me lethal. Not just Rizek's scourge. Time for my promotion to Rizek's executioner.
Help me take my armor off, I mumbled.
What?
What are you talking about?
Don't question me, I snapped. Help me take my armor off.
You don't want your armor?
Akko said.
Are you just going to let her kill you?
I started on the first strap. My fingers were calloused, but the straps were pulled so tight they still stung my fingertips. I forced them back and forth in small increments, my movements jerky and frantic. Akos covered my hand with his own.
No, I said. I don't need armor. I don't need a knife.
Twisting around my knuckles were the shadows, dense and dark as paint. I had taken great pains to ensure that no one else discovered what had happened to my mother, what I had done to her. But it was better that Akos knew, before he suffered for knowing me, more than he already had. Better that he never look at me with sympathy again than that he believe a lie.
How do you think my mother died?
I laughed.
I touched her. And I pushed all the light and all the pain into her, all because I was angry about having to go to some other doctor for some other ineffective treatment for my current gift. All she wanted to do was help me, but I threw a tantrum, and it killed her.
I tugged my forearm guard down just enough to reveal a crooked scar carved just below my elbow on the outside of my arm. My first kill mark.
My father carved the mark. He hated me for it, but he was also proud.
I choked on the word.
You want to know what Rizek is holding over me?
I laughed again, this time through tears. I tugged the last strap of my chest armor loose, yanked it over my head, and hurled it at the wall with both hands. When it collided with the metal, the sound was deafening in the small anteroom. The armor dropped to the floor. Unharmed. It hadn't even lost its shape.
My mother, my beloved, revered mother, was taken from him, from Chotet,
I spat at him. Loud. My voice was loud. I took her. I took her from myself. It would have been easier if he had looked at me with loathing or disgust. He didn't.